Blog Talk Radio.
Kept the gang gang and I didn't switch. Hey.
Ruby Rosa.
Do what you, nigga. Wait. See my mind fame, get it rich. Kept the gang gang and I didn't switch. Said I had no paper, hater, yeah, you wish. I never fell and see me ballin', baby, switch. My mind fame, get it rich. I kept the gang gang and I didn't switch. Said I had no paper, hater, yeah, you wish. I never fell and see me ballin', baby, switch. On the road, the riches sliding in the coupe. Fucked your bitch along the way, I ain't say oops.
Not my bad.
Where I go, should always be equipped with hoops.
Why?
I'm a baller, Gatorade, my favorite juice.
Oh my.
Haterade, what you sipping on? Get some money, quit the trip before I get you gone. I be whipping, I be dipping, I be in my phone. Every time I get the money back, I call it scarring. And you got no shots.
None.
Even if you had a Draco, it'd be no shot.
Not one.
I'm a certified dealer, you had no block.
Good friend.
I came in this game rich, you had no guap. Facts about me.
Word.
See my mind fame, get it rich.
Rich.
I kept the gang gang and I didn't switch. Said I had no paper, hater, yeah, you wish. I never fell and see me ballin', baby, switch. See my mind fame, get it rich. I kept the gang gang and I didn't switch. Said I had no paper, hater, yeah, you wish. You never fall and see me ballin', baby, switch. I'm counting me for favors cause it's getting boring. I go from looking out for him to looking for him. Keep the pants, niggas can't even touch my hands. I'm doing an MC Hammer dance while I'm touching bands. Only ones we're showing love to is my fans. Just because we are related, that don't make you fans. I'm in the game, you on the bench, riding all that wood. Niggas want me dead or worse, broke in the hood. See my mind fame, get it rich. Kept the gang gang and I didn't switch. Said I had no paper, hater, yeah, you wish. Never fell and see me ballin', baby, switch. See my mind fame, get it rich. I kept the gang gang and I didn't switch. Said I had no paper, hater, yeah, you wish. Never fell and see me ballin', baby, switch.
Hey man, all these niggas come around me, I'm starting you off for fucking zero. I used to start niggas off with 100, but now I got no faith in them. It don't make no sense, they always let you fuck down. Niggas do not be 100, nigga. They only be 85. I be like, hey, nigga, you sure? Go get the rest. Motherfuckers always looking for a handout. But they knew shit the way they front, be like, man, I ain't looking for no handout. I'm willing to work for mine. Whatever you got, you put me on. Nigga, that's a motherfucking handout. I need help, nigga.
We were made to hustle, we were made to ball. All my life I had to get it, ain't no days off. I swear to God that we were made for this, but the lifestyle dangerous. Sending shots and we ain't saving them. No, they can't play with them. We were made to hustle, we were made to ball. All my life I had to get it, ain't no days off. I swear to God that we were made for this, but the lifestyle dangerous. Sending shots and we ain't saving them. No, they can't play with them. Check, run to your town like a mammy. Dropping them. Package. I'm making your bitch a brick. Whipping the door with the right. Living that P on my wrist. Young nigga by the chip. If he play, he gon' get hit. I was down bad, dreaming by the Rolls Royce. Had to chase the fucking check, I ain't had no choice. I had to pick up my voice, pick up my pad and my pencil. Draw my life up with no stencil. Say I'm an issue. Throwing money in the club, popping bottles, let it sizzle. I know that these little niggas say that they hard, but most of them sweeter than Skittles. Hanging around with all my dogs, I feel like I'm Michael Vick. Don't push me, I'm close to a clip. Ball in a pool full of passion, drowning inside my ambition. Forever, nigga, we winning. I do not see no competition.
No.
We were made to hustle, we were made to ball. All my life I had to get it, ain't no days off. I swear to God that we were made for this, but the lifestyle dangerous. Send the shots and we ain't saving them. No, they can't play with me. We were made to hustle, we were made to ball. All my life I had to get it, ain't no days off. I swear to God that we were made for this, but the lifestyle dangerous. Send the shots and we ain't saving them. No, they can't play with me. I'm living my life because your time you would never know, no. We the ones on the road. Tell me do it how I'm supposed to, well. They saying that we the new way, but I gotta keep an eye out for enemies. Try to duplicate it, I know they many me's. I know you mean me no good. I was not taking no days off, had to run and get a chest of check. We were made to hustle, we were made to ball. All my niggas told me I was late. I'm on the road to the riches. Thankful, Lord, that I survived all the rain. Your nigga let me go and get it. I was ambitious, you could tell I was waiting for the bed. We was popping tags, last rockstar status. Ayo, name me headlights. That mean we swimming the storm. Yeah, we made our way inside the game, and they said we a problem. I'm just a young nigga. Oh no, come on, motherfucker, just a young. We were made to hustle. We were made to ball. All my life I had to get it, ain't no days off. I swear to God that we were made for this. But the lifestyle dangerous. Send the shots and we ain't saving them. No, no, they can't play with me. We were made to hustle. We were made to ball. All my life I had to get it, ain't no days off. I swear to God that we were made for this. But the lifestyle dangerous. Send the shots and we ain't saving them. No, no, they can't play with me.
Pissons, nobody listens. Bitch ones, rotten dick ones that I take grips from. I'm a dilettante, successful rapper. Where your hits, son? You a dirty nigga who don't matter. Eat a big one. I'ma eat these money bags, equipped with all them fixes. Cars, clothes, cribs, hoes, preferably dicks. Haters ain't want me to breathe. They ain't know I had my big son. Jelly ain't want me to leave. Half a million, I put my chips on. America great again. Troy Ave saying baking water with weight again. Trump saying make America great again. Troy Ave saying baking water with weight again. I'm wearing full and furs.
I'm in the street. All I know is that first, you've got to get mad. You've got to say, I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value.
What's going on, black people? It's Black America Radio with your host, Rasta B. Saturday, April 22nd. Today's topic, title of the show is White Elites, White Trash, and Black Fools. Trump is Obama to poor whites. Put Tump. But I gotta edit that. Maybe I could do that now. Add this R. Make that make sense. guest calling number 646-716-4654. We're gonna be talking about Bill O'Reilly, current events, Bill O'Reilly, Alex Jones, with his custody situation, and really I just want to laugh at the idea of black people even listening to Alex Jones. That shit used to trip me out back in the day. Ted Nugent, Sarah Palin, Kid Rock, at the White House. And I'm going to be reading from the White Trash book. And the title I'm going to be reading from is Chapter 12. Slummin', Slick Willie, and Sarah Palin. Were they going to really explain and break down the cracker, the redneck, and the cracker, the redneck, and I thought it was the third one they used, Hillbilly. The cracker, the redneck, and the hillbilly. So, what I'm going to be doing, to tie it all in, and I'm going to show you how. Well, I'm basically going to show you what's playing out right now so you can understand what's playing out. So, you can understand who these crackers is, because see, what happened is we don't understand the game, we only understand the narrative that was given to us about the game. So what happened is we end up believing shit that's technically not even correct. And that's the reason why we can never get out of the situation we're in. It's like, for example, you running to be free and the door is open for you to run out. But the person you're running with slips and falls and then reach their hand out and say, "Wait, help me." And then you stop and turn around and help them, and then you get captured. You know what I'm saying? And then you get another chance to run out. And they say, "Help me." Then you turn around and get captured. And this is something that you do over for the last 300 years. You see what I'm saying? What I'm going to do, I'm going to break down why you're not supposed to help this person, who this person is, and why engaging in this and helping this person, you're always going to hurt yourself. I'm going to break that down. So before I get to all of that, I want to read into this, the whole Ted Nugent situation. What happened was Sarah Palin, Ted Nugent, Kid Rock, they go to the White House, right? So I'm guessing everybody, I'm trying to kind of get a clear story about it, but everybody, you know, like the white elites pretty much, they had a little field day with it. They got a little mad because they had took a picture next to Hillary Clinton's picture at the White House. And I guess the polls pissed them off or whatever. But I can't find a clear story to read the actual story. But if I find that, I'm going to read a clearer story. But the whole point I want to make is what's really going on here in America is it's a war between rich white, poor white. And it's always been about rich white versus poor white. What happened is black people, we are, we're pawns in the game. You see what I'm saying? We're like adopted children, and our parents is arguing, and we like, all right, we're not aligned to none of these people. So we just got to deal with the person that is going to treat us the best, where we need to be trying to do our own thing. The war between rich white and poor white, that's since the Civil War. Rich whites and poor whites, the rich white elite and the poor trash, the poor white trash, the hillbillies, the cracker, the redneck. They have a standstill like North and South Korea. They have a standstill. They have an agreement. But that don't mean that they're cool and they like each other. The poor cracker makes up the United States, which is why they always vote on the Republican side or that conservative side. The elite cracker, well, the elite white, they run the Democratic side, but they don't have the numbers, which is why they use black, Latinos, things of that nature. They use us to do their bidding. Donald Trump, poor cracker, went out to vote. Felt like their voice was heard. Who is the poor cracker? The poor cracker is not just that image they show you on TV of some rundown white person that's missing teeth and skinny and scraggly. No. Poor white cracker, black people, to understand who the poor white cracker is, that's what I should say. To understand who the poor white cracker is, what you got to do is look at your own race. Look at your own race. You got black men and women who might be living in a house in a nice neighborhood and community with children, but ask them where they come from. They might be like, yo, I came up from the hood. I came up gangbanging. I came up, you know what I'm saying, boosting clothes. I came up fucking selling pussy. I came up goddamn in foster care. You know what I'm saying? But I made it, and I made it to this level in trying to give my children a better future. Are you a black elite? No, you a regular black working class person, but you still from the hood. You see what I'm saying? You still from the hood. That's how the white trash is. The white trash is your everyday white person. It doesn't matter if they making $100,000 a year. They still white trash. They still poor white trash. Just like when we're ghetto fabulous. Just like when our rappers get money. You don't look at rappers. You don't look at Migos. You don't look at Gucci Mane and nothing like that and be like, and I'm naming all these guys on purpose. You don't look at them and say, wow, that's black elites over there. Wow, those are top echelon black people. No, you say, that's new money. Them niggas wouldn't be shit without that money. So the same way how you screw up your face at black people, that's who white trash is. So when you're looking at these white people, you need to really stop looking at white people and thinking that all white people doing good and all white people got good credit and all white people. The majority of these white people out here is poor white trash. Majority of these white people out here is crackers. So in understanding that, you understand that you're dealing with people. You're dealing with people. You're not dealing with, I'm not even going to say you're dealing with a system. Stand that it's a system. But what I'm saying is, when you're looking at who's a part of this system, these are people. This system is not even strong because the people that runs the system ain't strong. The people that run the system ain't strong. So that's how we have to start looking at it. You can't look at shit, if white people, you know, they'll come and they got the this and the gadgets and the... White people is not stronger than you. White people is no different than you. The same way you don't look at black people strong enough to conquer you, that's the same way you got to look at white people. Because the majority of the white people that you interact with is white trash. You're not even dealing with top echelon white people that's pushing any buttons. You're dealing with white trash. Your managers at your job, all white trash. That middle class, all white trash. That so-called good community, All of that is white trash neighborhood. The reason why I'm saying this is so you can understand what the hell is going on. What the hell is going on? Trump is Obama to the poor whites, because the poor whites know that they have nothing outside of oppression. If they cannot oppress you, they have nothing. So what happens is their kids, their daughters is in the house twerking. And their parents is like, what the fuck? Why is my daughter shaking her ass like a black girl? Their son is listening to rap in their room. And they come in the house and they like, I kill for my niggas and I ride for my niggas. I shoot that bitch, you know. And the parents like, oh my God, what the hell is all this shit I gotta hear? And now they smoking weed and shit. And now they looking at black shit on the radio and on the TV. And they looking at their kids and they like, yo, we're losing our culture. Trump fed into that. They see their people dying from opioids. What black people die from with crack, they die from opioids. Whole families being fucked up. And we know it takes decades to correct that. Decades to correct that. These areas where these opioid issues is happening, mark them on your calendar and look at the quality of the white people that come out of there decades from now, 20, 40, 60 years from now. The same way you got to look at the blacks coming out of Flint 20, 40, 60 years from now. But it takes decades, and we're going to see that because we're going to watch children now growing up happen to have witnessed shit that children are supposed to see, and then going into foster care and growing up without parents and not having empathy and not having a understanding of what stability is and groundedness is, and in and out the prison system and committing crimes and having babies and not there to take care of theirs, and then another generation growing up like that, influencing another generation. So it's going to be, I'm curious to see how them whites come out during that. But that's what's happening in white America. While in black America, we already had our attack in the 80s. Was trying to cope with it in the 90s. Felt like we were getting a better hold of it in the 2000s. But then the music started to change to promote more drug use as we were coming off it. So now we're using other drugs. But a lot of us don't do drugs. A lot of us, if we don't do anything, no drugs, no drinking, or we pretty much stay to our weed. And then as you get to the next levels, the numbers get, you know, lighter and lighter. So we try to control our issues to build ourselves up. But these white people's here, they stuck. Like I said, they stuck in the middle. They stuck in the middle. So as we elevate and escalate and we rise into the top and we're trying to build space within this bottom class, the white class is popping. That middle class is popping. And the poor and the rich whites is like, I don't want y'all up here. And that's where the issue's coming from. so they try to fight against that. Bill O'Reilly, same difference. He deals within the land of the elite. But he comes from that white trash. He comes from that. But he feel like he's in the land of the elite. All of that sexual harassment that they talk about, all of that is class. All of this is, I have money now. I'm in a higher class range now. I know what to do. I know how to talk to you. I know that you don't have what I have. And if you want some of this, then you're going to have to give me some of that. That's how their game goes. Bill O'Reilly is white trash. If you listen to his story, he'll tell you he's come from white trash. But he's playing like an elite. Because that's how that game goes in the white world. They pick certain pedigrees and can coin them elite. And then some pedigree is white trash. And you can't come into their realm. So what the white trash did, they try to clean themselves up. So let me read some from White Trash, the 400-year untold history of class in America. Guest calling number 646-716-4654. Outing rednecks. So there goes the Baker scandal, talking about the Tammy Faye joint, I believe, was not enough to stop the stampede towards white trash and redneck chic and prevailed in the 80s and 90s. Margot Jefferson in Vogue called the new rage slumming. One of the most surprising confession in the vein came from John Hillerman, the American actor who played the prim and proper English butler, Jonathan Quell Higgins III, or Magnum P.I. Hillerman said that when he received fan mail from England, where he was claimed as one of their own, he wrote back, "I hate to disappoint you, but I'm a redneck from Texas." A growing chorus sought to clean up the image to make redneck a term of endearment. Let me read that again for all you black people who like to claim that y'all made shit up. A growing chorus sought to clean up the image to make redneck a term of endearment. Louis Grizzard, and I told you that whole cleaning up the word nigga to make it, to take the sting out the word, that come from Jim Jones, the cult leader. A growing chorus sought to clean up the image to make redneck a term of endearment. Louis Grizzard, who made a name for himself as a redneck journalist, thought it was time to stop mocking rednecks. He praised the 1993 anti-discrimination ordinance in Cincinnati that made hillbilly a protected class, and he hoped that Atlanta would pass a similar law for rednecks in anticipation of the 1996 Summer Olympics. In Florida, a man was charged under the hate crime statute in 1991 for defaming a policeman by calling him a cracker. For Grizzard, redneck meant agriculturalist, a person like his father who worked outside and acquired an uneven tan before there was sunscreen. He was wrong, of course, as the long chronicle catalog here has shown. A certain ambiguity remained. Redneck, cracker, and hillbilly were simultaneously presented as an ethnic identity, a racial epithet, and a workman's badge of honor. A working man's badge of honor. A North Carolina journalist neatly summed up the identity confusion. If you think you're a redneck, you think you're hardworking, fun-loving, and independent. If you don't think you're a redneck, you think you're loud, obnoxious, bigoted, and shallow. And the funny thing about that is all of that shit, if you take redneck out and put nigga, you're using the same damn example about yourselves. That's why I'm saying we're following narrative. We're not following our own thought. We're not following our own vibration that's pulling us to move towards what. No. These are already ideas and thoughts that's already presented to us. Even when it comes to Alex Jones. Alex Jones says, the shit Alex Jones says is no different than what all these other black guys be saying on the web. You see what I'm saying? If you really peep game on that shit. That's why certain shit, people, I don't fall for shit because I be like, listen, what that got to do with the upliftment of black people? You see what I'm saying? Once you want to start getting to weird shit, lizard people and all kind of weird shit, I'm like, what? What I got to do with the upliftment of black people? So it used to make me laugh when I seen black people listening to Alex Jones because the most simplest form of black power and black and Pan-Africanism, in my opinion, is I'm not sitting here listening to no white person. I'm not listening to no white person. Now, this book I'm reading for True Indeed is written by a white woman, but I'm reading her writing about her own people. You see what I'm saying? But I can't sit here and listen to no Alex Jones. And when I say listen, I ain't talking about somebody that might be like, yo, listen to this nut job talking about the America. Listen to this nut job talking about this, talking about that. Right? No, I'm talking about people that listen and be like, yo, but he be telling the truth, though. No, but look at this, though. Look at this. And I'm like, yo, why are you listening to a white dude put you on to oppression that's going on in America? That shit don't even add up. But that's what they do to the poor white. And what happened is black people get hip to these shits and they sell that shit to the, in the black community. And we just have a black version of what whites do to each other. Added to the article was a pop quiz featuring questions about NASCAR, food, and TV's Hee Haw. As if by a simple computation, right answer could distinguish the real Bubbas from the wannabes. To be sure, breeding remains paramount in the consideration of identity. In 1994, one irate journalist insists that Georgia politician Newt Gingrich was no redneck. He was born in Pennsylvania, had no southern accent, and served as a college professor, and got elected to Congress by suburbanites of Atlanta, many of them Yankees. This newsman's expertise came from the fact that he was kind to a great many of that breed. Besides, he chided, Gingrich wouldn't last half an hour in a room of genuine rednecks. You were a dyed-in-the-wool redneck, or you weren't. By this measure, Gingrich nor David Duke, and the former Klan member who ran for governor of Louisiana in 1991, was a redneck. Duke was disqualified because he loved un-American Nazi salutes. Submitting a plastic surgery to make himself too pretty was also out of character. No good old Southern boy would dream of such a thing. It's unmasculine, unSouthern. This was the view of Jeffrey Hart, a conservative intellectual from Dartmouth College and former speechwriter for President Nixon and Reagan. Rednecks was no longer the exclusive province of country singers. It had become part of the cultural lingua franca, a means of sizing up public men and strangely mutated gender and class identity. Nor were women silent in this debate. Two prominent female writers were acclaimed in the modern genre of white trash fiction, in the tradition of William Faulkner's and James Aggie. Dorothy Allison and Caroline Shute offered unsparing accounts of rural poverty. Allison creatively reconstructed the conditions she knew from her early years in Bastards Out of Carolina, while Shute, a working-class college-educated writer from Portland, told of trailer trash in rural Maine in her breakout book, The Beams of Egypt, Maine, 1985. What set these writers apart was that they wrote from within their class, not as outsiders, outside observers. They were out in themselves, and she knew precisely how to describe poor women's experiences. Class and sexuality remained their dominant themes, and neither sugarcoated her subjects as good old girls. What they showed instead was that women cannot wear white trash or redneck as a badge of honor. Allison is the better writer that said a spare prose may have been intentional for Shute. She captures events as they are happening, offering few insights into the inner life of her white trash subjects. The Beams are a sprawling extended tribe who take over the underbelly of Egypt. They are an assorted lot. There is Bill and his mother, Mary Beam, the latter, of whom in Crazy and Kept Locked in a Treehouse. Reuben is a violent drunk who ends up in prison. Auntie Roberta pops out babies like rabbits she skins and eats. Reuben's girlfriend, Madeline, endures beatings at his hands. The character's other talents are shooting and procreating. Bill sleeps with Roberta, and some of her children may be his. She, meanwhile, would never win any awards for mothering, allowing her babies to roam at will and to be spit, hissed, and swallow pennies. Bill rapes, or doesn't rape, his neighbor, Erlene, whatever her last name is, who becomes his wife, though he continues to sleep at his aunt's. Madeline parades around in flimsy halters that let her breasts fall out. So, if I read this to you and you didn't know that I was reading from, talking about a white writer writing about within her own experiences living as poor white trash, seeing these things in her community and with her own eyes, and I read this, you would think I'm talking about poor black people. But that's what you're not understanding, black people. Y'all moving in from black areas where we are on the social pole in America on the bottom to go up to the middle class, which is poor white. And that shit to me is crazy. So I'm going to say it again. Just because we're on the bottom, that's not bad. All we got to do is make the bottom pop in. And now the bottom becomes the top. It's the middle class. It's the poor whites that's trapped because they stuck between us, who they don't want to be and despise, and rich whites who they don't want around them. You can't be us. This woman's telling you a story in her writing about how they lived, these white people. We don't know these stories because we listen to narratives that tells us that this is who we are. What we don't understand is the poor whites are the ones who were our so-called masters. Not all, but the ones who was able to afford it. When they were selling your family, when they were selling our family and breaking the families up, they wasn't breaking the families up because they know that was how you break black people up into families. Any black scholar that tell you that is lying to you. They broke up the families because they couldn't pay their loan to the banks. Half them crackers couldn't even read. Pay the loans to the banks. So then they had to sell property. And your black ass was property. The war in America is between rich whites and poor whites. Black people is just in the middle. We keep getting stuck because we keep stopping to help instead of running out the door to be free. We don't need to help the rich whites to destroy the poor whites. We don't need the poor whites. We don't need to help the poor whites to help destroy the rich whites. All we need to do is build ourselves up. All we need to do is stick to ourselves. Because if we try to emulate middle-class whites, you're pretty much emulating poor whites. And then you're just going to have, you're just going to be a different form of trash. Because you're going to run away from the blacks and say, these ghetto-ass niggas, to live amongst the cracker whites, and then you start to damn do their weirdo shit and pop in their pills and getting drunk and leaving your kids upstairs in the room and all kind of weird, all kind of shit that we don't do, you're going to start to do. Because you're going to think, well, they do it, and you know white people do shit right, so. And then once we do it, then everybody starts to say, see, that's how black people do it. So this is the shit, basically, that we have to understand, that the war between in America is between rich whites and poor whites. So let me go back into some more of this reading. Okay, so here we go. The lessons here is that the choices people make are both class and gender charged. Allison's story served as a reminder that many more people, women especially, remain trapped in the poverty into which they are born. It is the exception who becomes the author Allison, a successful person capable of understanding the poor without condemning. The American dream is double-edged in that those who are able to carve out their own destiny are also hard-pressed not to condemn those who get stuck between the cracks. That's that Des Bryant comment. That's the Des Bryant quote in Charles Barkley. When these blacks get money and they start to think, I made it, why can't you? we don't even realize who we mimicking, who we behaving, how we behaving. We behaving like white people. And what we're doing is we're creating a similar system within black culture of classism, where we're trying to create an elite black class and a ghetto class, dominant ghetto class. That's what's going on. If you understand that, then you'll understand the type of leaders that we have and why nothing gets done. Because they're creating a classism within us that it keeps being destroyed because white people treat all black people the same. So once they start to shoot and kill blacks who have a little bit more money and stature, then it's like, wait a minute, we all got to fight for black people now. But when they're killing poor blacks, nobody screams. Got to pay attention to that. So as it was with the character Scout to Kill a Mockingbird, an awareness of the routine nature of injustice is more forcibly depicted when it's seen through the eyes of a child. As the literary canon took on a new dimension with the rise of a talented generation of white trash writers, Americans returned another Southerner to the White House in 1993 with Bill Clinton. The national spotlight focused once more on the uneasy relationship between class identity and American democracy. The boy from Modest Beginning in Hope, Arkansas, had won a Rhodes Scholarship, was a Yale Law student, graduate, and served as the governor of his state. In short, the American dream. William Jefferson Clinton was a perfect example of what his namesake, the man from Monticello, had formulated in 1779. Raking from the rubbish, a deserving youth who could eventually join the nation's aristocrat of talent. In his 4th of July speech, in his first year as president, Clinton recounted the story of how 30 years early he had met President Kennedy in the Rose Garden of the White House, shaking his hand, standing in awe as a boy from a small town in Arkansas with no money and no political connection. The Clinton saga was a blend of Charles Dickens and Dorothy Allison. He did not grow up in a financially secure middle-class nuclear family of the 50s. Rather, his father had died 3 months before he was born, and his mother left him in the care of grandparents and great-grandparents while she attended nursing school. The strength of our family could not be measured by the weight of our wallets, he proudly declared on Independence Day in 1993. But as the public learned from his mother, Virginia, there were the darker side to Bill Clinton. In the biography film shown during the DNC convention, Clinton's fractured roots was exposed. He may have taken the name of his stepfather, but as a 14-year-old found, he had to stand up to him. Roger Clinton was a card dealer and a gambler. He drank too much, and he became violent. One day, Bill quietly told him, "Don't ever, ever lay your hand on my mother again." But like Shute and Allison treatment, of their male characters, he was not without compassion, saying of his stepfather's problem, he didn't think enough of himself. He had internalized that sense of white trash shame. So, you got to understand that this is what white people fighting for. This is what white people seeing that Trump is trying to give them some pride and dignity so they can go out and get a piece of this American dream too. You see what I'm saying? So the whole point that I'm making is, why are we wasting our time and opportunity, wasting money, wasting opportunity, thinking that America changed, so now we like white folk? No. This shit is between rich white people and poor white people, not you black people. All you black people need to be doing, when they arguing, when rich whites and poor whites is arguing back and forth and they fighting on the ground, instead of you trying to break it up and talk them out of fighting and tell them how great they are and shit like that, when they fighting, what you need to do is get you a bag, open up that register, and take all the money out. Open up that safe, take the money out. Look over your shoulder, they're still fighting. All right, you sneak out, you drive off. That's what you got to do. By the time they finish fighting and shit like that, you long gone. That's what you need to do. Open up your new restaurant. Open up your new business. We're in America. We built America. We in and out. We entangled and entwined in America. But we scared to take a portion of America. Or do you think marching is how you're going to get it? Or begging is how you're going to get it? You got to take it. Opportunities we miss. You got people like Russell Simmons who taking advantage of black people, turn around and come out with a rush card. Majority of people in the hood is using the rush card. Russell Simmons talked for all the shit that Russell Simmons talked. Russell Simmons could have turned the Rush card into the Rush bank. And all of those people who had those debit cards and was getting their money, the direct deposit on those cards, those could have been checking accounts. And those cards could have been Visa logoed debit cards. And them people could have been using online banking until he slowly started. Then he could have started buying. Then, you know, with the kiosks and slowly built up like that. Well, he could have did everything with through the online shit. Not him, but hired somebody to do that. But no, what he did, a so-called glitch happened where they grabbed the money and ain't paid the people. Now they got a lawsuit out. Then Russell Simmons sells the goddamn the Rush card shit to the fucking greenback niggas, sells it to them, and they don't have no connection to that lawsuit. So if you think because it's sold to greenback is going to be responsible, they're not even responsible. But guess what? They're going to keep it called the Rush Card. So why these rich blacks is not doing nothing to help the poor blacks? Because they're part of the problem. They want to create a class system within black people. They want a mirror image white version of black America. That's wrong. We have to create black America to suit and benefit black people. We worrying about the wrong shit. Let these white people fight. But we got to build ourselves up and get strong. These people are the ones that have the issue themselves. It ain't us who got issues. The only issues that we have deals with not believing in oneself. You see? That's it. So now they go, let's talk some more about this Clinton. So they go, JFK had Camelot, Reagan was Hollywood royalty, Clinton and Elvis were rags to riches monarchs. The king of kings American looked up to were men with a hard-to-explain sex appeal and a gentle hubris. The point was that a little white trashiness could be a blessing in disguise. In the parents-driven world of modern American politics, arrogance of style carried weight, and repressed suit and tie candidates such as Walter Mondale and Michael Dukakis were not in the same league as Clinton. To allude that redneck chic to had a little bubba was better than being a dull and invisible cookie-cut politician indistinguishable from the pack. Figuring out Clinton remained a favorite pastime in 1998, looking on with horror at the trumped-up presidential adultery scandal. The novice Toni Morris drew her own conclusion. The violation of privacy, the ransacking of the presidential office when he was metaphorically seized in body search, was for her the kind of treatment black men face. No matter how smart you are, how hard you work, you will be put in your place. Clinton had overreached. He was our first black president, Morrison mused. The tropes of blackness were apparent in his upbringing in a single parent and poor household, and in his working class ways, his saxophone playing the love for the junk food. The Clinton will was Elvis-like. He was not the redneck Elvis who still had devotees in the 1990s, but the hillbilly cat Elvis of the 1950s, the young who transitioned the boundaries between black and white, something that was only possible to do in confronting and comfort among the lower ranks of Southern society. So, again, how do they use Clinton on black people is they just treat you like poor white. That's how you get fooled, black people. Because you don't understand that the name of the game is in the three-party system is it's the rich elites on the top, the poor whites in the middle, and black people on the bottom. Rich and poor is on the bottom. Bottom section is the section for the black people. It is not for you to run away from black people because you're on the bottom floor. It's for you to build up and make poppin' like you know we can. So the people on the top floor and the middle floor will have to now pay attention to what's going on the bottom floor, which really makes us the top floor. But when you want to run from that and building up, then you become them. And then they play the game on you. The same way they play the game on themselves. And then you don't know it because you think, oh, this is racism going on. Yo, you're playing their game. This is sexism. This is classism. This is ageism. This is all of that shit is their shit that they create in their system. You can't sit there and say, I believe in black independence, but I want to follow the ideology of white people with their isms and schisms. You can't do that. You can't look at poor whites, like, for example, you can't look at Bill O'Reilly's sex scandal and then say, oh, he should be treated the same way as Bill Cosby. Why? Why should he be treated the same way as Bill Cosby? Why should Bill O'Reilly be treated the same way as Bill Cosby? Why? These are white people judging Bill O'Reilly. These are white people judging Bill Cosby. It's not black people doing anything. Because black people don't want an economy. Without an economy, you don't got no power. So why should Bill O'Reilly be judged the same as Bill Cosby? Because you said so? Because you suggested? Because you'll be mad if I don't? I don't give a fuck. Big bang take little bang. How many of y'all remember that? So, the thing is this. You live in a capitalistic society. The only way to protect yourself is with an economy. The name of the game is race. So you have to click up within your race. In this race, he who have a strong society controls it all. Excuse me. He who have a strong army controls it all. We just saw Trump them flexing their muscles. All these black people scared. Oh, we're going to be in World War III. Oh, Kim Jong-un and all this other stupid shit. And I'm just like, this shit happens every fucking time a new president comes into office. Every time a new president comes into office. I remember when Bush was in office, they used to have on the news how one of the, maybe his father or some shit had bombs and how close it was getting towards California, and another time they were saying how with the Hawaiians would have to evacuate some shit. Like, this is all posturing. Because as long as they got y'all panicking and scared and running around and woo, it throws you off your square. The question is, where your money at? The question is, how you gonna get money? The question is, what you gonna leave for your children? Property, business, a lump sum of bread? Recipes for dinner, bacon stuff, some ingredients for food. Like, what are you doing? You worrying about North Korea? Come on, what are you doing? Are you resisting, or whatever the other one is? Like, stop following these hashtag shit. The war in America is between rich white elite and white trash. You're just a pawn in the middle. You're a fool. thinking you got to pick a side, who you need to fight with. So Bill O'Reilly gets fired. We cheer, we celebrate. Well, who gives a fuck? Where's our news? We got Roland Martin. Where's our news people? We got Roland Martin. But where's our news people? Where's the rest of our people that's speaking? Where's our male black man perspective on television? But we laughing because Bill O'Reilly got fired. But how many of us got hired? Let them that laugh, laugh. Let them laugh. But that this don't have nothing to do with us. Let them laugh. That's their story. How far is it to the next grocery store in your neighborhood? That building on the corner, that's abandoned. The perfect spot for a corner store. How much does it cost to get that building? Do you know? Did you call? Have you ever called and inquired? How much does it cost to get that building over here? You never know. What if that shit costs $15,000? What if it costs $50,000? What if you're a dope boy and you got $100,000, you don't know what to do with it, and there's a building that you could purchase and you can get some legitimate money if you move right? You got to inquire. You got to make phone calls. You got to do research, plans. You have to think. You have to imagine. Cut the TV off. Stop saying to yourself, what the fuck was going on out here in the world? Look what's going on in your community and say to yourself, yo, you know what? What can I do to make money off the people here? What can I do? What can I do? Now listen, nothing happens overnight. But what can I do is a seed. And you plant that into your head. And when you on a train and you're listening to music and you're looking around, you might sit there and look around and say to yourself, you know what? We need clothes. And you might think clothes because you already a natural designer. And the next thing you know, you're looking at YouTube and shit, how to design clothes or how to make clothes. And you got a piece of paper and you thinking of different things that might be dope on black people. And you come out with your own fucking clothing line. Then somebody asks you, yo, what made you come up with this? Be like, yo, I was just, it was like 3 years ago, I was thinking to myself, yo, what can I do? Like, I need to do something. You know what I'm saying? And I just thought that. And it was like 3 years later, I just came up with this idea, like, yo, you know, I want to make clothes. I just so happened went to class for school for it, and I seen where I could apply it, or I just see it looking at people all day, and I'm just thinking to myself, yo, this is what we need. Another situation, you might be like, yo, I'm a welder, or I'm a somebody who can, I don't know, set up some shit where, like the brothers who got the toilet tissue company, or somebody that's going to make up the forks and spoons and knives, somebody else that's coming up with fingernail clippers or some shit, you know what I'm saying? Like, we need manufactured shit. We need warehouse shit where we're just generating goods where we can bag these shits up and have these shits being sold within our hood. You know what I'm saying? Within our communities, exporting out and things of this nature. You see what I'm saying? Like, don't think any idea that you have is too big. Just think about how you're going to get that to happen. And don't think that it's going to, the idea is going to hit you in a year. It's going to hit you in 2 years. That might be something that hits you 5 years later. Because different events may happen in your life now that you have this thought. So now you think to yourself, you know what? Change subject. You know what? You have a child now, and you say to yourself, now that I have a child, I'm going to give myself 6 years because I know that's when my child goes to school. And I want to now do something where generate some money where I can have set up for my child when they get older. First, you got to think about that. What could it be? You don't want to rush because you don't want to put yourself in no jam, in no position. But you just think about it. You look around, look in your community. Go on the computers and shit. Trust me, it's a lot of shit out there. You'll find something. One of these years, you might get it. Next thing you know, let's say you're baking or some shit and you're making cakes and muffins and all kind of shit like that, and you're making sales off of them shit. So it's like, we as black people, we can't move like society wants us to move. We can't think how society wants us to think because society is designed around rich whites and poor whites. And 9 out of 10, you're being taught to behave as poor white. Think like poor white. And we can't move like them. We can't move like them. We got to move like our own self. So, something I do want to bring up before so I don't forget. They got this stock Kush bottles. The ticker is KSHB, and you got to get that because that stock is taking off. It's at $2 and some change right now. I think like $2.50 or something like that. But what happened is the second quarter revenue increased to like $3 million, so that's a good sign. But you know, the stock is took a dip, people taking profits obviously, but you want to get into that. High Times named it the official container bottle for High Times or whatever to carry your urban and all kind of shit like that. But like I said, You open up these accounts, your E-Trade, your SkyTrade, your TD Ameritrade, and things of this nature. You open these things up, and what you do is you just put these stocks in your watch list and you pay attention to them. Like, every day you just look at it. See if, you know, the movements, it's going up, it's going down. You get the news, read the news. So when I'm speaking about them, and if I say make that play, then you'll be well informed whether or not you want to make that play or not. And then you'll have money being put aside because you should have money coming out your account, going into your E-Trade account. or whatever your brokerage account is. That way, when it's time to make a play, you'll have money generated instead of saying, okay, I'm going to take money out of here and I'm going to do this. No. Let money come out of your account, you know, each check, you know, let's say $50 if you want, and then you do it like that. That way, it's not killing you when it's going into that account. That money's accumulating. If you ever get in a jam, you could pull money out of that account, or you put it, that money into a stock so it can flip. You see what I'm saying? That extra cash can flip and get some bread up. Because if you ain't got $10,000, you shouldn't be talking. So that's my whole spiel. You know what I'm saying? Like I said, when it comes to this whole black-white shit, I don't get caught up in all the other extra shit, because my thing is, at the end of the day, is the white people, they themselves, and they need to be where they be at. You dig what I'm saying? And we ourselves, and we need to be building up who we are. And as long as we keep on trying to amalgamate amongst them and fucking, you know, just move in and live amongst and follow their cultures, and eventually they start following our culture, then eventually we start following their culture again. No, we never going to rise up. We're going to be stuck in a middle-class muck, and we don't want to be stuck there. You see what I'm saying? We want to create our own, and that's what we need to be focusing back on to that. You see what I'm saying? Instead of focusing on trying to mix in with them and name our kids their names and hope that they can identify whether we're black or white, and teach our boys to speak without no base and cheese and smile and show your teeth, and our daughters to echo. You know, we can't do that. We got to dead all of that shit. And the only way to dead that shit is to, one, recognize who these people are. This is white trash you're dealing with. That's who you're dealing with. That's no different than saying I'm dealing with ghetto black people. You're not going to see ghetto black people and then acting stupid and then turn around and be like, hey, why are you acting like that? Hey, we should march in this community and teach them that we're just like them. No, you wouldn't do that to ghetto black people. Black man, black woman, black child. You wouldn't sit over there amongst ghetto black people and try to convince them that you're a human, or try to show them that you're not doing none of that. You're going to look at them like, yo, you're beneath me. Fuck out of here. And that's the same way you need to treat white people. Because we have an inferiority complex. And the sad part about it is, we got an inferiority complex towards poor white people. That's the sad part. That we sitting around over here, skinning and grinning and smiling towards poor white people. We wouldn't even do that towards poor blacks. We wouldn't even do that to black people who just brand new to money. We're not going to skin and grin. We're going to look at them like they ain't shit. But when it comes to us, we treat us like shit. When it comes to them, we treat them like it's gold. So I'm going to read a part titled Forgetting Men and Poor Folks, where they're going to be talking about poor whites. All right, so it goes. All I knew, it would be extremely difficult to dislodge cultural prejudice. In 1938, he sent questionnaires to distinguished academics across the country, asking each to define what poor white meant to him. Where and when did did they first hear the term, he wanted to know where their state and regional differences and how the term was used. Where did they think the term originated? What were its distinctive features? What other terms were prevalent that carried similar meaning? The response revealed how slippery to label poor white could be. While several psychologists said outright that the term was fuzzy, a loose example of name calling, most of older known 46 respondents listed as many negative attributes associated with poor whites as came to mind. The most popular adjective was shiftless. It was connected to a string of synonyms: purposeless, hand-to-mouth, lazy, unambitious, no account, no desire to improve themselves, inertia. All these descriptions conflated the unwillingness to work with some innate characteristic flaw. Shiftless was not a new word, chronicling his southern tour in the 1850s. Frederick Law Olmsted had used it to categorize lawful slave owners and slaves alike. It was a favorite word among New Englanders in describing bad farmers, and was a common reproach towards tavern keepers and other immoral characters who congregated in dens with lower laborers. By Theodore Roosevelt's term, it was the word of choice and legislation that punished deserting husbands. Shiftlessness was a major symptom in the eugenics diagnosis of the degenerates. And it was a coarse second nature to vagrant and hobos. W.J. Cash in The Mind of the South, 1941, portrayed a shiftless poor white sitting under a tree, holding a jug and surrounded by his house, while his wife and children were out working the field with a kind of lackadaisical digging. Social proximity to blacks was the second most popular explanation for the association with shiftlessness. So they're trying to say that because they live in close proximity to blacks, that's why they act like that. In 1929, with the parents in the movie Hearts and Dixie, the very visible African-American actor known as Stephen Fetchit began a film career in which he popularized for an entire generation the cruel stereotype of laziness suggested by his on-screen name. In his response to Odom on poor whites, Irie Dia Reed, a black scholar at Atlanta University, recalled that when he was growing up, race etiquette required that he never address a poor white with the name unless he expected to be called nigger in return. For Reed, white trash, poor whites, and niggers all conveyed the same social stigma. Many of Odom respondents claimed that the destination poor white trash derived from black vernacular. According to the Mississippian, when whites of the upper or middle class used it, they qualified it with, as blacks would say. Odom's respondent noted that poor whites live near poor black neighborhoods, and it was virtually impossible to distinguish their dwellings. To some middle class whites, the slight elevation in status of poor whites over poor blacks was but an empty courtesy. from outside the South in Cincinnati, one psychologist wrote Odom that the mountain white will call briar hoppers and subject to de facto segregation just as urban blacks were. Briar hoppers were a variation of the old English slur of bog trotters aimed at the Irish. To Odom's respondents, the 12th century had little effect. Poor whites were still abjured, a breed apart, an ill-defined line halfway between white and black. Under no circumstances did they ever socialize with, let alone marry, respectable whites. To another of Odom's correspondents, they were like a mule to a horse or a hound to a dog. Whereas dogs were respectable, hounds were ornate. As dying in the woods racists say of all blacks, it was said that white trash that, like the leper, they couldn't change their spot. So, like I said, we need to separate ourselves from black people because these white people have issues with their own selves. So while we trying to mix and mingle and be a part of people that's fighting, you're going to get fucked up because you're going to be in the middle of these two people fighting. So this is Independent American. This is your host, Rasta B. This is black people around the world listening. And I want y'all to know that we out here. We just need to stop moving backwards and move with common sense. And common sense say, we outnumber everybody. So once we take control and you start that within your own house, then everything will change. Other than that, peace.